This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hey, my name is Kate, and you're listening to This Australian Life. This week, we speak with Ellen, who is an actress raised in the Sunshine Coast and who now lives in Melbourne. Ellen has an interesting and opinionated story as she shares what it was like for her growing up and what it's like now in the acting industry in Australia. Thanks for listening. When did you know you wanted to be an actor?
Oh, wow. When I was about 17. That's the answer to the question. I was in high school, and my drama teacher at the high school I was at was really incredible. We used to do these exercises where we would crawl all the way from drama class to the principal's office in a line and be a snake and just crawl all the way to the principal's office. There was no other classes we were doing that in. Do you know what I mean? Like maths wasn't happening. It wasn't happening in any other subject. And like, I know that makes me sound insane, which is fine. Maybe I am, but it was just a really liberating, freeing experience because I went to such a conservative, backwards school, and I felt like I could be free and have fun in that class. Also, the drama teacher was just really switched on, you know, like she really cared about drama and cared about your individual voice and got you to do lots of different exercises that you could talk about things that you were passionate about in front of the class, as opposed to just doing, you know, Brecht or Chekhov plays. Like, we did actually explore our individuality and get on stage in the class stage. So like raised 10 centimeters from the actual ground. It was a stage though. And people that, you know, bullied you outside of class could actually sit and listen to you while you performed about like social issues and things. So you felt really empowered. And that was the class that I felt the most empowered in. And like I had the most say in things and that I could be heard and, you know, make some kind of positive change. Like no one took drama seriously except for me and this one other gay guy, and we formed like a band together and did all these protests at assembly about bullying, and like I was really into it, hey. But yeah, no one really cared about it at our school except for me and this other guy, Sam. And yeah, and then, yeah, the other subjects, all our teachers were, like, always away or sick, and we had substitute teachers a lot, and, like, it was just, I wasn't interested because the teachers weren't interested, and I think your teacher at high school really influences the way you feel about a subject because they're the representative of that subject at that particular time in your life. Like, I was just a kid, and, like, I only cared about something if the adult cared about it because I was like, why should I care if you don't care? Like, if you hate this job, then I hate it. Like, and I don't respect this issue. So yeah, my drama teacher was just super woke and into it, and it made everything fun and understandable. So I guess that's what made me really interested in it. I also had a lot of rage as a 17-year-old. Like, I was ragingly angry, and that was kind of my outlet, like a healthy outlet as opposed to other things that weren't so healthy. So
were you bullied as a kid?
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't bullied at the school I went to before that, but the school that I went to the last 3 years of my high school, yeah, there was a pretty bad bullying issue at our school. Yeah, it was bad. Like, yeah, but I think that, like, all the greatest people get bullied at high school. Like, I don't know. There was just so many terrible people at that school, and they were just awful people. I don't know if it's their fault or their parents' fault or whatever, but I guess I just, the only thing I wish is that I just didn't care. Like, I wish I didn't care that they were horrible to me. I wish I just, like, didn't care. I just said that twice. Yeah.
I'm making this face just because I feel like it's normal to care that you're bullied.
Totally. But you know how there's those people that are like, some guy's like, oh, you fucking asshole, you dumb idiot. And he's like, shut up, I don't care, you're an idiot. Like, I have a really supportive family and I know I'm loved, so just shut up, dickhead. Like, I wish I could have been like that back to those dickheads, but really I was like, oh, why don't you like me? Back to myself in the bathroom eating my sandwiches. Some girls used to yell at slut when I was walking to school on the way to school. And the funniest thing about that is that I was a virgin. Like, and I was like, what? Oh my God, that's so mean. And yeah, slut was the really big one. I got called that a lot. And yeah, a lot of the girls didn't like me hanging out with the boys. I think they were like jealous of me or something. I don't know. But the only reason I was hanging out with the boys is because they were bitches. So I was like, you can't win. Yeah, it was pretty shitty. I didn't feel like I could kind of like fit in anywhere because of the girls being mean to me and then the boys kind of not treating me with much respect either. So it was kind of like this weird thing where I was like, well, who do I hang out with then? Do you know what I mean? It was pretty weird. It was a trip, man. I feel like high school's a trip for everyone though. Like, you know, I'm not the only one. It's worse for other people.
Did you tell your parents you were being bullied at school?
Yeah, many, many times, and that I wanted to change schools, but this isn't like a pity party for me or anything, but like they genuinely didn't think that was a priority. My dad organized me to see a counselor, it consisted of this old lady showing me a period chart, and it was very patronizing, and I literally hated it more than anything in the world. It was awful.
It was a chart for your menstrual cycle?
Yeah. Like, she completely just did not want to talk about anything else. Like, all she wanted to talk about was that. And I had no idea why she was talking about it. I did not know why we were talking about periods at all. I just got sent to see her, and then that's all she talked about the whole time. It's pretty funny.
And then when you told your dad, like, hey, heads up, all we're talking about is periods.
Yeah.
What do you say?
I can't remember what he said. Something that was, like, dismissive. I don't know. He was busy. I left high school. Then I moved straight out of home as soon as I turned 18. I moved to Brisbane. I grew up on the Sunshine Coast. And then I went to this night acting school thing. And it was really expensive. And I didn't have any money. So I used to be the cleaner there so that I could afford to go to classes. So I used to clean their building for them. Like, basically it was their cleaner so I could do their classes. And I was living in a room. This is really funny. I haven't actually thought about this for so long. I was living in a house with my bedroom had three walls and a curtain as one of the walls, and it was kind of not a room. And I was living with a girl and another man and his partner, and I didn't know this while I was living there, but I found out later that one of them was a prostitute and the other one was like dealing drugs. And yeah, it was just very strange. The whole thing was very strange, but I was just like, I'll just live wherever. I just need to get out of the Sunshine Coast. And I was living with these people, but like I never saw them doing anything weird. Like, they were always out, so it didn't really bother me. I was just happy to not be at school or on the Sunshine Coast. And I was just always super excited because I was always just doing stuff at that acting school. So I was pretty stoked to be living with such interesting people, really. I mean, they were really interesting people.
So it's like you're having breakfast with them.
No, there was never a time where I was having breakfast with them. They were in bed. I think the prostitute, by the way, there's nothing wrong with being a prostitute. But like I think she was high most of the time. Like, yeah.
How did you find out that they had these professions?
It just clicked one day, like, that this girl used to have this sign on her door that says do not disturb. Like, it was like a hotel. And oh, that's right. Yeah, it ended with her stealing all my shit, so I had to leave. So she was great up until she stole all my stuff. And then I had to get out of there. The reason I even lived with these people in the first place is because I was friends with this guy at high school who was friends with a guy from the same high school that had this, like, really crazy party house on the Sunshine Coast, and it was his sister. And he was like, you can go and live with my sister in Brisbane to get out of here until you find somewhere. So that was kind of like my, before I moved into my starting to like, it was like $60 rent a week. And to me, that was a lot. Like at that time, I was 18. So I was like, you know, I needed somewhere to sleep. I was working so much that I didn't really get involved in it all. But it was a really beautiful house, actually. But yeah, she stole all my stuff and I had to leave. So, but I was there for like a year. It was pretty wild. The other two respected me a lot. It was just her, but I don't think she disrespected me. I think she just was on another planet. Like, I don't think she even really realized what she did. I think she was just in her own world. Like, I'm not even like, I wasn't even angry about it. I think I just laughed. I was like, it was weird. It was weird how like not angry I was at anything at that time. It was weird. I don't know how to explain it. I was just really happy to be out of home, I think. And I was just doing my own thing. So I was like, oh, it's a few clothes, whatever. Like, I didn't really care about them anyway. So, well, I was working at this place called General Pants Co., which was super trendy. And like, I'd never been in like a trendy club or like, I could like, it's kind of like a cult, General Pants, or it used to be anyway. Like, to get hired at General Pants back in the day was like this big deal. You had to like have like a retro resume and like colors and not in black and white to be hired. You had to like know somebody who worked there. Like, you couldn't just like walk in and hand in your black and white resume. Like, you had to be kind of like alternative and cool. And like, when they hired me, they were like, we don't normally hire people like you, but you seem different. And I was like, yes, I am different. And like, yeah, kind of like that was just like the most hilarious job. Like, the boss there was on meth, I swear to God. He used to throw shoes at my head if I didn't sell anything for like a few hours. Like, he used to abuse me. Like, it's so intense. We were like, the people that worked there were like really off tap though, like really creative, weird people that did a lot of naughty things, and I didn't get involved in any of that. I just wanted to like tag along and be a part of it. Like, I was like the rhino at the end of the stampede, like, guys, wait up, like, be my friend. Because I like didn't know anyone in Brisbane, so I was like, they dress cool and they wear odd socks, they're open-minded, they're not like Queenslanders. Completely naive to what was actually going on. Oh, and I'm working in a nightclub as well, I forgot to mention. I was basically like sleeping 3 hours a night. It was a mad time. I guess I just wanted to be rich really fast, which didn't happen, by the way. I just wanted to, like, be really independent and sufficient, but still have a great time. And, yeah, it was a lot of work, but I somehow seemed to be fine. Like, when you're 18, you don't get tired.
Do you still feel like you're that harder worker now?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Do you still sleep 3 hours?
No, I sleep, like, 4 hours now. No, I sleep, like, 8 hours now. Definitely mellowed out a bit, but like still have that like determinedness, I guess.
Hey, my name is Kate and you're listening to This Australian Life.
Well, it's always been the acting thing, you know, but it's more like focused on writing and acting as opposed to just acting.
So then you started taking these classes. What were they like?
They were okay, yeah. Like, we did lots of physical stuff, like improvisation and clowning and physical theatre. Yeah, a lot of improvisation from memory. It was literally so long ago. I remember it being really super fun and liberating, but not sure if it was really worth the amount of hours I spent mopping. It was a very expensive one, and it didn't do HEX because it wasn't a government thing. It was like a private institution. So it was like all fees up front kind of thing. I moved to Paddington. Well, I don't know. What did I do then? I got into TAFE at, I'm not sure what TAFE it was called. It's like South Bank TAFE in Brisbane, and did performing arts there. And then I got into QUT acting, the fine arts acting course at QUT, and then did that for 3 years. And I also did a little bit of modelling, and I did, and then I, yeah, it's a lot. A lot of things happened.
for acting, how do you feel like it's changed for you now that you're writing and that you're performing?
It's more empowering because instead of reading scripts that are kind of just like really base level, like not that interesting, I'm writing my own stuff. It's much more complex and political. And then also starring in it, because why the fuck, why the piglet not? Because I can. Yeah, so that's what I'm doing.
Tell me about auditioning. What's that like?
Oh my gosh, it's so awful. I hate it so much. But you got to do it. And it's not like some auditions are good. It's just when they don't know you from a bar of soap and you don't know. And there's like a million people in the room and, well, not a million, but like, you know, six people in the room. And like you have literally got 1 minute to just prove to them that you are great. You just like, I do all the preparation and everything and know my lines, know the character, be prepared to improvise and change things I've learned. So try to be as open as possible. But then you get in and it's never what you planned it to be, or you know what I mean? Like it never goes in the direction that you think, and it's a interesting process. But you're also auditioning them just as much as they're auditioning you. Like sometimes I've been into auditions and I've gone, I don't want to work with you people because you're not woke. Like you're dumb.
What do people say that makes you think, oh, you're not really with it?
Sexist stuff, or like sound really controlling, or like, I don't know. They say something like, we've been also looking on Star Now for other roles. I don't know. It's always different. It doesn't happen a lot. But my point is that, like, it's important for me to remember that I'm auditioning them as much as they're auditioning me, so that it's not like I have to please them, you know. They have to fucking please. They have to piglet please me as well. You know what I mean? Like, I'm worth something and I have a lot to say, and you never go in like desperately wanting a job, even though you do. You just pretend that you don't. You know what I mean? It's a weird thing, auditioning. It's like a fine line between looking like you don't care at all and really caring. Because I really care. Obviously, I want the job if it's a great script, but there's not a lot of great scripts, which is why I've decided to go and do a master's in writing and then start writing my own plays, and hopefully in the future start writing other things as well.
Like you said, it was a strong script. Would you do it just like no matter what?
It would depend who was involved, like what people were involved in the project. But yeah, if it was a great script and it had funding and one or two really great people working on it, then absolutely.
Absolutely. Why?
Because it's more about making great art than it is about money. Yeah, you got to look at the bigger picture.
But couldn't you say that you can just do, even if you had the worst script in the world, couldn't you make that good?
Nah. You need a good script. You can't do anything with a bad script. Naughty script. I mean, like, you can try. But it's not easy. Like, you can do some good acting. It's just, why would you want to do something that you don't like? That's my question. Why would you want to do something that you don't believe in? That doesn't make sense.
What if you really like the people? You really believe in the people, but for some reason there's not a great script.
Well, I mean, you'd have to address why you don't think it's a great script. Like, maybe it could be a great script. Maybe it's in its first draft or something, or... It's just all about having that discussion with the creatives and seeing where they're at. Like, it could be just that they haven't thought about something, or that it seems to come across discriminatory, but they haven't meant to. And then you have a discussion about it and it's resolved really quickly. I think it's important to question things in scripts, though, that you don't necessarily think are looked at closely enough, though. Especially white people. They tend to, like, write things and not realizing that maybe what they're writing is, like, super ignorant. Like, yeah, you've got to really always be thinking about the bigger picture, I think, with anything.
Right, like you don't want to put your name to something that could end up being misconstrued.
Yeah, totally. Or work on something that is below your standard. Like, I've done that before, like, you know, just because I've wanted to be working and developing my craft, but then ended up with a really bad product and not wanted my name on the product anymore, but I've already done it, you know? So you've just really got to be careful what sort of jobs you do say yes to.
Have you done a lot of stuff that say you wouldn't get paid anything?
Yeah, I have, which is unfortunately the way that it has been for me. I'm a bit of a hustler though, so I have done a lot of things for barely any money, but some money to compensate for travel, food, time, but not really anything too crazy money-wise. Like, obviously the commercials I've done are paid well, but like feature films that I've done and short films and things, like, yeah, just really the bare minimum I've been paid, which is fine. It's nice to be paid, obviously. I did a degree in acting, but everyone's in the same boat. Like, it's so hard to get work on in Australia. Like, funding cuts are insane, more insane than they've ever been, and people just want to make great art. Like, I mean, if you've got a really good group of people around you, like, you will eventually get money. You just got to keep at it. It just takes a bit of hustle, and I'm kind of in that process at the moment where I'm getting paid not very much, but enough to sort of just stay afloat. But at least I feel like I'm telling interesting stories. I mean, I'd rather be doing that than telling stories that weren't interesting and have a whole bunch of cash. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Do you ever feel like it's almost like gauche or like frowned upon to talk about money?
Kind of depending on where you're talking about it, I guess. Like, sure, like, yeah, you wouldn't like go up to another actor on set and be like, how much are you getting paid? Like, obviously that's not okay. But you do, yeah. I think I've been lucky because my agent discusses all the money stuff, and so I don't have to really talk about it with other people. And I don't really mention it unless I'm asked by a radio interviewer.
Fair.
People are having these conversations. Like, it's terrible, kind of the conditions that actors work in and the amount that's expected of actors. Like, I've been definitely like used and exploited and taken advantage of in terms of my time and like the level of skill that I do have as an actor. And that is frustrating, but I'm sort of like an anomaly. Like, I really try to look at things glass half full all the time. And like, I'm sort of a freak in the sense that I'm just like super grateful for like any kind of opportunity. So I'm like a nutcase. Like, most people wouldn't do half the stuff that I've done because they'd just be like, nah, that's BS. Like, that's not right. But I just like, I'm just like, I'm alive. Like, I'll just do whatever, bro. Like, I mean, like, sometimes it's like I need to not do that. And I'm starting to get better at that. And just like saying no to stuff. But I just really enjoy working on stuff that I believe in. So it's like, it's hard.
Tell me more about some of the things you've done that you don't think half the people you know would have done.
It's like, I can't really say because, yeah, I don't know if I want to say that on radio.
What is it? Oh my God.
No, I'm just like doing like takes like 100 times when it wasn't my fault. It was the cameraman's fault because just amateur stuff. And then just like, an actor would have said something a lot sooner than me, but I just keep doing it because I get this like sick. I've got this thing where I'm like, I'm just really hardworking that I'll just keep doing it. And like, I'd just rather get the right take than say something. I think a lot of actors are just very hard line in there. We'd just be like, no. But like, I'm not on a Channel 7 show where I'm getting $15,000 a week. Or $1,500 a week would even be great. But I'm talking about like low budget short films here, like where everyone's just starting out. Like, I'm not talking about really high end professional work. Like, I don't think that would fly at all. Like, I think after like the third take, they'd be like, get your shit together, cameraman, you know what I mean? Like, and they'd be on the actor's side. But that's the thing, you got to, like, there's no protection. like I'm with MEAA, but like when you're out doing like a short film out in the middle of nowhere, like you just do it. Like, because what else do you do? Like whinge and then like cause like an awful energy on the whole set. Like you've just got to get it done, you know?
Do you think other people are thinking the same thing though? Like, let's just get it done.
Yeah, definitely. But like, I don't think, I don't think a lot of people would continue to work for free or little money the way I have. I think people would have given up by now, like, and just not put up with it. That's what I mean in terms of the fact that I'm an anomaly. Like, other people just wouldn't say yes to jobs like that.
Right. So you keep doing it?
Yeah.
Why? Like, what's going through your head?
Because it's a passion of mine. I love it. Like, I love storytelling. I love the craft of acting. That's what I studied at university. It's what I've always wanted to do. It's the only thing I've ever been interested in. Yeah, just telling powerful stories, like, that are really truthful, because I think they need to be told. And, yeah, I think I'm really good at it. So that's why I do it.
Do you feel like if more people said no, like if you said no more, do you think that would maybe start making a change in the industry?
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure, because I don't feel like I'm in a position where I can really say no to things, because like I'm not like a name yet or anything. So I can't really be like saying no to anything. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I can say no to like non-paid, low budget things, which I don't do those anymore. I've done so many unpaid, low budget, like short films, independent theater gigs and stuff. So I've kind of done that. Like, I don't want to do that anymore. It's like really disrespectful of like my skills. So if I was offered a job that was like, you know, a main stage gig or like a big film or something, like I wouldn't say no, but I would say no if it was an unpaid project.
And we're back with more from Ellen and This Australian Life. Thanks for listening. Coming into your acting now, you're starting to write. How do you see yourself changing as a performer now that you start writing?
I don't think that I'm going to change as a performer at all. I've always been like the same. I think that I'm just going to be able to actually be seen more now. It's not like a matter of the fact that I've, you know, I mean, everyone changes, obviously, like, and evolves through their life. But in terms of, like, my acting style and my ability and everything like that, I think it's more just that I'll have a platform to be seen from now as opposed to not being seen at all.
I thought it was interesting once I saw you post on your Facebook that you're stopping modeling because people keep seeing you as a model and not an actor. Do you want to expand upon that more?
Yeah, well, I mean, I went into like a casting agent's office once for a audition for a film, and she said, "Oh, it's so great to see you doing a little bit of acting." And I'm like, "Oh my god, like I literally am an actor." Like, that's so patronizing and awful, because she was one of the main leading casting directors in Australia, and I just started modeling when I was 27 as like a means to help my acting career, because I'm like really tall and I just didn't realize how I could just stop waitressing and model. I just never really thought about it before, and so I tried it out, and then it just kind of like went really well for a little while. So I was just kind of doing modeling, and then casting directors like started to know me as a model more than an actor, and like you have to just be one or the other or something, like you can't just be both. But yeah, like when she said that and a few other casting directors said the same thing, like it wasn't just her, it was a few like really well reputable, well known casting agents for acting, it made me really reassess where like how people perceived me and where I was going. And I just sort of went like, it's not worth the money. Like, I just would rather focus on acting and be taken seriously as opposed to just like be seen as like a model. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just like, I don't know. And I know that I respect modeling and everything like that. It's got nothing to do with like not wanting like to be known as a model. It was just more that they like didn't think that I'd done any acting or anything, like that I didn't even go to drama school and study it for 3 years full time, like fine arts level. Like, and spend thousands and thousands of dollars on classes after that, like, and do all these short films and independent shows. And it was like, that was, it just made it feel like that was all for nothing. And like, they just saw me on like billboards or like in campaigns looking pretty. And because that had more exposure, that meant that that was the only thing that I did now. It was weird.
Did that ever make you question your acting?
No. I've never really questioned acting, like, ever, which is sort of weird because, like, a lot of people, like, yeah, like, don't really have, like, confidence in acting stuff. But, like, I don't know. I've got this weird, like, thing where I just, like, it's all I care about. So, like, I don't know.
Is that weird? Do you feel like a lot of actors feel like that?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of really serious actors feel like that for sure. I feel like it's something that you're like born with, or that it's just in you. Like, it's just one of those things, because you have to be kind of insane to want to be an actor. Like, it's so insane. Like, it's literally the likelihood of it working out is like 1 to 1 million or maybe 1 billion. So yeah, you have to be completely insane, really. So yeah, no one would do it unless they had to. Like, I've tried not to do it, and it just made me so depressed, and like, I'd rather die. So I honestly just can't think of anything else I would want to do.
I reckon, especially in Hollywood, and maybe it's the same in film in Australia, the industry can be seen as being quite male dominated. And you talk about bullying. Do you experience that at all in film, how you're treated?
Yes, Kate. Yes. yeah, 100%. I've literally had to call my dad on lunch breaks and be like, how do I deal with this situation? This guy is being an absolute douchebag. I am going to punch him in the face. If I have to go back and see him, I need to talk with you. What do I do? And he's just literally been like, Kate Blanchett's been in this situation many times, which makes it way worse, obviously. Anyway, my dad's great. He just doesn't, he's not in the industry, so he doesn't understand. But it's just talking to someone is the point before you do something you regret. Because, yeah, sexism, misogyny, internalized misogyny, it's a cultural thing too. Like, there's this, like, white fascist dominance, like, over everything, and a lot of camera crews are just all white men, so it's just an energy, and you feel like your voice isn't heard. You have to shout, you know, 4 times louder than men just to even be heard. That's just on a base level. Like, that's not even before you're actually talking, you know. Like, just to be heard, you have to, like, almost be political. Like, you don't want to be, but you just have to be if you want to be heard. So, like, you know, and then if you're too, like, feminist or whatever, like, then you get labeled as, like, just a crazy, angry, difficult to work with girl. So you got to find this weird medium between being assertive and not letting people walk all over you and still being really easy to work with. So it's a fine line, and you've got to navigate it, and you've got to know when and where it's okay to say something, because it's really subtle sometimes, you know, just in the comments that are made about you and the attitudes of men on set and things like that. All of it can affect your performance, and all of it can affect your, you know, mental health if you let it. So you've just got to be really careful and sort of see things in a bigger picture as well, and know that, you know, sometimes people don't even realize that they're behaving in a certain way, and not take it personally. I've had to leave job once because of the incredible sexism, just on another level. Like, and I've left a couple of modeling jobs in tears because of the way I was treated by white men. And yeah, there's been some situations that have been pretty heartbreaking that I've had to deal with, but I don't internalize that and think it's my fault. I just know that they're complete douchebags, and I talk about it with friends, and I can see what it is. It's a cultural thing where they think that that's okay. And I think more now, especially since like Me Too, and especially since like there's so many amazing, intelligent, like women of color and all these different diverse people coming out and talking about things that are really important, and people are actually like realizing how bad it's been for so long and actually taking responsibility for it. So that it's less and less now, thank God. But it shouldn't be happening at all. Like, there should never be that. You should never go to a job and feel like unsafe. Like, that's just ridiculous. Like, no matter what industry you're in, it's just like not on, you know. But yeah, like, it's definitely a huge part of the industry. Like, God, it's like the worst like industry for that. Like,
I guess I'm trying to understand, like, if you're treated this way, like, why do you keep going back to it?
Well, I don't go back to those jobs, obviously. I don't work with those people again.
What do you say? Like, do you talk to your agent? Like, what do you do after that?
Yeah, I talk to my agent, talk to friends. And then, yeah, I've spoken to MEA about it. Like, I've been on the verge of, like, you know, reporting things before, but then decided not to because it's just so exhausting, like, the whole process, which I just don't want to even, like, I've just got so much like, other stuff I'd rather be doing. And it's just like a whole ordeal, like paperwork and like, you know, you've got to give names. It's just, it's so intense. You're like, I don't know if I want to deal with this. Like, it's just like intense. So it's like, yeah, like, yeah, I say stuff to my agent and my friends, but I've never like reported anything or, but I probably should have. It's just more that, you know, I don't want to be difficult to work with.
Moving forward, now that you're creating your own productions, you're writing your own things, how do you check yourself and your sort of the way that you behave with others?
Well, for this show that I'm in at the moment, the first thing I did was send them a list of 50 ways I think we can all help each other and help ourselves look after each other, including mental health and like physical well-being and like caring for other people. And just making sure that there's a really safe space in rehearsals. So, like, before we even start rehearsals for the show I'm doing at the moment, like, I'll just say to the other actor, like, if there's any time you need to leave for any reason that has nothing to do with me, for personal reason, just, like, leave. And I won't ask any questions. Mental health is, like, the top of my list for anything. I've ordered, like, all these mental health magazines from, like, the performing arts thing and like given them such a nerd like and I've given them all like magazines about how to look after themselves as well as like articles that I've sent them. That's for the, like the actor and the whole creative team because it's just a two-woman show and then there's a big creative team. So yeah, but I've in all my emails I emphasize and re-emphasize how much I want to make it clear that there's no hierarchy in any of the rehearsal rooms and that mental health comes first all the time. And if there's anything anyone wants to talk about, it's a safe space. And if there's anyone ever saying or doing anything discriminatory that they're not aware of, please raise your voice and we'll like give that space and try and do something about it straight away. Because it's just like all the stuff that I hate about the industry that I want to like embed in my practices like completely. I'm also trying to make the show as inclusive as possible, so I've really tried to reach out to a lot of different people from different cultural backgrounds to help out and, you know, read the script and let me know if there's anything discriminatory in there about women that, you know, because I can't write, you know, other women's stories for them. That's the worst. But like also making sure I'm not being an ignorant white idiot in what I am writing, you know? And yeah, like there's an Auslan interpreted performance and a relaxed performance because I want, you know, everyone from any background to come and see it, not just, you know, middle-class people. Like, I just, that is so boring to me. Like, I want to be able to have people that aren't, you know, fully able-bodied to be able to come as well. Sorry if that's not the right way of putting that, by the way. You know, like some people can't come to performances because it's not Auslan interpreted or it's not a relaxed performance. Like people with epilepsy or that have suffered trauma or that, you know, are hard of hearing. Like they still want to go and see plays. Like, but, you know, a lot of independent theatre doesn't include those things in their performances. So I wanted to do that and just trying to do as much as I can to be as as inclusive as I can, because I think it's really important.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
So are you paying your actor?
Yes, I'm paying everybody.
Yeah, yeah, mate.
Yeah. I've like gone out of my way to raise money for this show, and yeah, it's not that hard to do, guys. Like, other people out there that want to put on a show, like, just do some crowdfunding. Then you can actually pay your artists money.
Sweet. What are you working on next?
I'm doing Just Us Girls and What's a Girl at Fringe Festival. And then next year I'm doing a show called Denzel Washington is Probably Really, Really Happy Right Now at Theatre Works.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Ellen.
Thank y'all.
Hey, everybody. That's all for this week with This Australian Life. And just wanted to say that we hope you've enjoyed the show today. And feel free to shoot me an email over at thisaustralianlife@joy.org.au if you have any comments or questions, anything you'd like us to know at all. So again, my name is Kate, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.